Greetings, everybody. I'm Jeremiah.
That's him.
She's Vanya.
That's me. Welcome to another episode of the Beard & Curls podcast, where culture and creativity meets consciousness.
And if you're new here, consider subscribing to our YouTube channel or follow us on your favorite platform for the latest, most exciting conversations anywhere.
You ready?
I'm ready. Cue that intro.
What's up, guys? It's your girl, Margo Bingham.
Karen Parsons.
You're now tuned in.
To Beard & Curls.
Beard & Curls.
Beard & Curls.
Beard & Curls.
Beard & Curls. Keep it locked.
Today's guest is a mental health advocate, a WayFam host at the Way World Outreach in San Bernardino, California, amongst other things. We're talking about none other than Lorianne Sacco.
Lori, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks so much for having me.
All right, so tell us a little bit about your history. So now you studied psychology. What made you decide to go into that field?
Well, it's actually a really funny story. Initially, when I was younger, I saw this movie. It had Billy Crystal and Robert De Niro. I don't know if you guys heard of it, but it was Analyze This. So it's about Robert De Niro's character, who's a mob boss, and you know, he can't do things like kill people, or he's looked upon as really weak. So he goes to Billy Crystal, who's a psychiatrist, and decides, hey, I need some help. So he hires Billy Crystal, and then you just see Robert De Niro just like sitting down on the couch, you know, telling him his problems. And I think that sparked something with me, because Robert De Niro was looked at as weak if he couldn't, you know, continue to be the mob boss that he is. So that naturally kind of just like hit home, because like a lot of times, you know, just growing up, it was mental health was kind of like looked upon as a weakness. And so I think that's what started getting me interested in it.
Okay. So just as a follow up to that real quick, I like that story. So do you like Analyze This or Analyze That better?
Oh, good question. The original is always better.
I thought so. Yeah, Billy Crystal, Robert De Niro. Yeah, that's nice.
So, Lori, what was your family's reaction to your decision?
Well, I think the biggest thing was going to school and finishing school. So, you know, unfortunately, my mom was just automatically a caretaker. So she got married really young, and then she started taking care of us. And so she always tried to finish school. So her biggest thing was, I don't care what you major in, I support you in whatever you do. Just make sure that your initial thing is making sure that you finish your education before anything. So before getting married, before, you know, having kids, whatever the case is, make sure that you get an education first and foremost.
Did they have like kind of like a preference for maybe what they thought you should do, or what would probably bring in the most money? Or like, I know they let you do your thing, but did they have any thoughts as to what your career might look like?
Well, I think in our culture, it's more of, you know, you do your education, but that's not like the end all. It's, you know, you get married, you have kids, kind of go along with that course, in that technically the husband would be the main breadwinner. So I think if it was, you know, if I was a boy in my family, I think my dad or my mom would have pushed us to do, you know, be a doctor or a lawyer or something of that sort. But because I'm a female, it's more of like, well, whatever you do is good, but, you know, your end result should be get married and have children.
And how did that make you feel, actually?
Well, I think for me, when I was young, I wasn't looking at marriage whatsoever. I was kind of like, okay, they're a little crazy. I'm just going to do what I want to do anyway. So like my mom was encouraging me to go through school, and I'm like, okay, I'm good with that. So even though that was what they wanted, what they had their own plans for me, I think God had something completely different. So I got into the field and I started really liking it and enjoying it. I think that's what encouraged me to just go through school, was I was thinking to myself, like, well, I know they want me to get married. And, you know, if that happens, that happens. But if not, I'm going to have to make sure that I rely on myself. So I had like a Arabic mentality, but I also had the American mentality of like, no, I don't want people to support me. I got to take care of myself. So they had envisioned something completely different than my life now.
Yeah. Nice.
So culturally speaking, how does your community approach mental health or mental illness?
My family migrated when they were younger. And then so when they have their own culture in their own homeland, and then us being, you know, first Arab Americans, we kind of have like the old traditional mentality, and we also have like the new American mentality. So Looking at it from my parents' generation, they consider mental health as more of a weakness. So in the Middle East, you don't have a lot of places that have mental health because, you know, culturally, it's like you only go to a therapist if you're mentally weak. So they don't believe in therapy whatsoever. But coming to America now, like how our generation is, we've come to see like the effects and the stigma that our parents had. And a lot of us, you know, we recognize that there are mental health issues, whether it's anxiety, depression, whatever it is. It's like our generation is a lot more open to go and see a therapist versus the older generation is just like, there's no way. Like, you will not, I don't care if we have marriage issues, I don't care what kind of issues you have, you figure it out within the family. So I think like with our culture, you have a collectivistic group and you have individualistic. And so our family is more collectivistic. So if there's issues within the family, you as a culture kind of like come together and figure out those issues instead of you going off on your own and going to see a therapist or whatever the case is. With our generation now, it's like we recognize, you know, some of us have a lot more issues because of how we grew up. So, you know, going to a therapist is probably a really good idea. So instead of looking at, you know, you're mentally weak or whatever the case is, it's like now we're more encouraged to go see a therapist because we're dealing with the issues that our parents didn't really address initially.
I understand. So, like, how would they address the issue? So you said, like, they come together as a family, but what if they don't know how to resolve the issues after trying? Like, what do they normally do?
I think a lot of the times is that they don't know what to do. They kind of like brush it under the rug. So it's like if somebody's struggling with, let's say, drugs or other like things, they, you know, they'll have a sit down conversation with you. You know, like this is disrespectful to the culture. You know, they kind of like lecture you. And so what I find is a lot of times is when they're getting lectured, the kids will sit there and just be like, okay, I won't do it again. But then, you know, late, like somewhere in their own lives, they're just doing whatever they want to do, but like they'll hide it from their parents. And so that's with our generation. With the older generation, it's just kind of like, you know, if you don't get it together, we're going to like smack you until you like, you know, you behave the way that we want you to behave.
Gotcha. So then obviously you talked about being first generation. So how much of a change have you seen over time and how they perceive mental illness from when you were coming up to where you are now?
Well, I think, you know, the traditional Arabs, they kind of view mental illness as, you know, like I said, like a weakness. If you're struggling with something, it's because you're mentally weak. Or, you know, a lot of times is that you will see, you know, people on the street that have schizophrenia and clearly they have mental health issues. But like to the older generation, they're like, okay, they have demons in them. You know, they're more of like there's something, you know, spiritually wrong with them versus where you're coming toward, you know, the first American Arab American generation. And we're looking at it like, hey, you know, they actually have a disease, they have schizophrenia, they're bipolar, there's something mentally wrong with them. You know, they need things like medication to kind of like help stabilize them.
But that's the thing, Dolores. So like, how much of influence have you guys been able to have on that generation to kind of get them to become more open-minded about these other possibilities?
I think a lot of us pretty much struggle because I think half of us are thinking, I don't want to be mentally weak like my parents are indicating or the cultural stating. So a lot of them still have that stigma of if I go to a therapist, I'm considered mentally weak versus there's, you know, other people that from our generation where they're like, no, I'm not necessarily mentally weak. I just need that help. And so some of the, you know, some of our generation kind of thinks, okay, I don't want to keep going. I don't want to, you know, deal with the whole therapy. I don't agree with it versus other people have become more open and recognizing, hey, like I do have issues and I need to swallow my pride and go and see someone.
I understand. Like, so personally, like for like somebody who decides, like a first generation or somebody like that who decides to go see a therapist, are they kind of like going against like cultural norms and do they face potential backlash? Like how is that part?
I think, you know, for my family specifically, I know that if there is someone that kind of goes and seeks a therapist, initially the family would be like, oh, there's nothing wrong with you. Fix it yourself. You don't need a therapist to help you. I can help you. I can be your therapist. And then you're like looking at your parents like, ah, you got your own issues. I don't want to let me go to a professional. So sometimes there's still that stigma that you have to face. But I think now it's like, I think the older generation is becoming a little bit more open with it versus initially they were like, are you crazy? You know, don't tell anybody in the family that we're going to a therapist. They're going to think you're crazy and we don't know how to handle you. So I think they're okay with you going as long as you don't make it known to, you know, everybody else.
Like, that's what I was going to say. So it's like, they're concerned about their reputation or how people are going to view them and things like that. Maybe they don't want people talking about the business like that. So it seems to be like those things. Because I want to know, like, where does the stigma come from? Is it because of some of these things or they don't think therapists actually are effective or, you know, some of the things that we've talked about?
I think because, you know, therapy is just such a huge stigma in our culture where they're thinking you're mentally weak. So it's like, no, we don't want our family to be known as mentally weak ones. Like, and I remember growing up is when we did have problems within our family, my parents were more of like, no, you keep that to yourself. You don't tell anybody that anything that you're struggling with, like you need to figure it out internally. And a lot of times when I was younger, I couldn't figure it out internally because I was going through so many, you know, hormonal issues. I like was growing up, I had to learn a lot of things on my own emotionally because I didn't have that opportunity to share my emotions openly because of the fear of backlash that I would get from my family. Like, you shouldn't be feeling this way. You know, if you are feeling a certain way, keep it to yourself. I don't want to hear about it, you know? So I did kind of face a lot of those kind of issues growing up, you know, even with me and my cousins and my sisters. It was like we kind of confided in each other, but we could not confide with anybody else. It's just kind of like our generation, we're like, does your family do this? Because this is what I'm struggling with. And so I think growing up, we kind of confided in each other because we're like thinking like this is not normal, but we didn't tell anybody else. It was just more within the family, you know?
Did studying psychology help you with your healing process or just understand yourself better that you felt like you got like better coping skills?
It did actually, because growing up and I was studying, you know, why we are the way we are, or, you know, just how different cultures view therapy, or, you know, how they're raised as kids. It's kind of like it kind of gave me an opportunity to look through their eyes and think like, okay, you know, this is what is socially normal. This is what abnormal. And so it kind of taught me a lot of things of why they thought the way that they thought, you know, and it also taught me more about myself. Like, you know, the stuff that I was struggling with wasn't abnormal. It's things that all kids kind of go through when you're growing up, when you're going through that adolescent phase. It's something that I, you know, at first I was like, oh my gosh, I'm crazy for thinking this way. Why am I even, you know, going through this? What's wrong with me? But in reality, it's things that everybody goes through and it is normal. It's just how you deal with it, basically.
What are some of the things that your generation can do to kind of break that stigma for the next generation that comes after you?
Well, I think just talking about it, I think now our generation is starting to open up a lot more. Where initially we were kind of like, hey, make sure that you conceal everything. I think it's been taught to us so much that now we're like, okay, like, let's actually talk things through. Let's make sure that we're okay. Let's check on each other more often. And so just teaching the next generation that, hey, you're not emotionally weak, or you're not, you know, less of a person if you do go to therapy. So just kind of changing that stigma by, you know, talking it out, making therapy more normalized versus, hey, you don't go there because you're considered crazy if you go.
We're focusing a lot on what's happening here in America. So as far as the Middle East, how is therapy viewed and what are some of the things that can be done to maybe destigmatize mental health a little bit more?
That's a good question, because as of right now, I know that mental health is not very big out there in the Middle East. I think because there is that stigma of, you know, like how we grew up and how it's not normal to do those things, it's still carried on in the Middle East. So you don't see a lot of people that are practicing mental health, but I think it's slowly opening up because now, you know, they have things like PTSD because of the wars that are going on constantly, or they, you know, they struggle with anxiety and depression more because of what's happening in the Middle East. So I think now, whereas like you're considered crazy for thinking these things because they have gone through a lot of trauma, now it's beginning to open up a little bit more because now you want to deal with the PTSD symptoms, you know? And so I think because of the things that's happening in the Middle East, they're becoming a little bit more open to going to therapy and dealing with these issues. Cause now it's not like you're crazy. It's like, hey, you know, we're going through these things. You know, the kids are seeing other kids being blown up, or there's a lot of violence there. So, which is not normal. So for them, it's like, okay, we're dealing with things that, you know, are very traumatic. So I think it is best to, like, you know, send our kids or us to get the help that we need because we're going through a lot of experiences that are not normal.
You talked about PTSD quite a bit. So what are some of the other common mental health issues or mental illnesses that are impacting folks back in the Middle East?
I think what's happening besides PTSD is that a lot of people are facing anxiety and depression. And because the majority of the Middle East are in the Muslim religion, it kind of bleeds through into the culture. So where you have things like, you know, women, you know, women don't have the same rights that we have over here. So if they're going through, you know, issues with their husband, they can't talk to anybody about it. And so what ends up happening is it causes a lot of anxiety and depression within themselves because they can't go anywhere. They can't, you know, like their husband is the person that's like gonna, you know, kind of rule them. And so it's just like, you don't get a voice when you're, you know, when you have a husband like that. And so what ends up happening is a lot of women suffer from anxiety or depression, or let's say that, for example, a man can't work or there's something going on where he's just unable to go to work or take care of his family, then you're going to have examples of anxiety or depression as well because they're not able to provide. So in our culture, it's like, you know, the man is the sole provider. They're supposed to provide for the family. They're supposed to do everything for the family. Like everything kind of falls back on them. And so sometimes, let's say if they have to go to war, they're, you know, they're just unable to physically care for them. What ends up happening is they feel a lot of shame and, you know, depression in their lives. So I think a lot of stuff that they're also dealing with, it's kind of like here as well. You know, the things that we face, they kind of face over there too. So it's more of, you know, there's a lot of depression that I've found in the Middle East as well.
You personally, you're a Christian. So like, what are your thoughts about mental illness from that standpoint?
Well, you know, as a Christian, I find it in the Bible all the time. So I know that a lot of people try to separate it, but I've kind of, you know, there's like scriptures where it says anxiety in the heart causes depression. Don't be anxious for anything, but in everything, prayer and supplication. So it does address those things. Like clearly there is, you know, mental health issues that we deal with as believers. Being a Christian doesn't exempt us from going through troubles and tribulations. It says the opposite. We are going to face a lot of things. You know, we're going to go through life. We're going to be hit with numerous things. Like it doesn't, the Bible doesn't say that our lives are going to be easy going as a Christian and walking through. It's going to actually be harder. The Bible is full of psychology. There's so many, you know, people in the Bible that they go through stuff and you just see, you know, God, you know, encouraging them because they are getting discouraged. They are getting depressed. You know, they struggle with real things and it hasn't changed. Today, we still struggle with, you know, maybe not the exact same things, but we still struggle with a lot of things that have to deal with our mental health. So for me, I think that, you know, the Bible just kind of clearly goes over these things. And I think that mental health is in the Bible clearly. And, you know, God addresses those things.
Look at somebody like Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, you can't tell me he wasn't a narcissist.
Wow, you
know. Bow down to me and kiss my feet.
Oh, you would have had a field day with him, Jeremiah.
Kiss my feet.
Kiss my feet.
Yeah.
And even the demoniac. I mean, that dude was possessed out of his mind, but there was some mental health stuff going on with that as well.
So. Mm-hmm. That's true. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because a lot of times, you know, with schizophrenia, like before, people used to believe that people that had schizophrenia were demon possessed. And so like nowadays, if someone has schizophrenia, the best way to kind of, you know, decrease those symptoms is by putting them on drugs. And so it's like, okay, are you dealing with the root issue? Because like a lot of times we try to mask, you know, these mental health issues with drugs, but sometimes you need therapy. Sometimes you need someone to just to talk to, you know, like release all that frustration. Because I think what ends up happening is a lot of times, you know, we kind of carry things within us and we let it build. And then we like go off and people think, oh, she's crazy. But in reality, it's just like a lot of frustration just kind of like built in. So it's like a lot of times, you know, we want to mask it with medicine but sometimes we just need to like talk to one another, go to a professional to help you walk through those things and not necessarily over-medicate ourselves, you know? Mm-hmm. That's a whole different conversation.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, like, because you have this expertise, do you feel like people in your community feel more comfortable approaching you?
That's a good question. I think because they view me as the therapist in the family, even though I haven't like continued my education yet, they're always coming at me like, what do you think about this? You're the professional in the family. Like, what would you do with this? And I'm like, oh, I'm not there yet. But because of what I've like studied in general, it's kind of like funny because like I know how to deal with stuff, but it's because like I'm in God's word. And so a lot of times it's like God has the answers. So they kind of come to me and they're like, what should I do? And I'm like, I'll just do what God's word says and I'll just pass on the information. So a lot of times I'm like, okay, I'm not that professional. Let's get it straight. But it's funny that like with every single small issue, they just kind of like run to me like, what should I do about this? What should I do about this? And I'm like, I can only give you, you know, things that I've learned from my own life. Like until I'm able to get my master's and become licensed, I can only do what I'm able to do for them, you know?
Are you going to claim it now, right now? You going to break news with us? You going for that master's in psychology?
Still praying on it. I mean, but I honestly love it. I think because of like what I've gone through in my life, I wish I had somebody to talk to going through the things that I had to go through. I wish that there was somebody that kind of, you know, furthered their education in mental health, because that probably would have gave me an opportunity to, you know, say like, hey, like there's stuff that I'm dealing with. I could really use your help. But because we didn't have that growing up, it's like, that's why I chose to become part of this field, was because there was nobody that's in the field where I can go and talk to them about these things. And so for me, it's like, you know, going through it and just kind of learning the stuff that I've learned, I can help people like me with my family where, you know, they had nobody to turn to, but I'm like, hey, I can be someone, you know, to help support you in these areas. So I completely, you know, I hope that that's what's going to happen. I hope, you know, to go further in the education. But until then, I'm just going to do what I'm doing now, you know, kind of help them through with the word of God.
So switching gears a little bit. Okay. And so you were prominently featured in a Lendero Success Story commercial. What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was really interesting because I have a coworker and she was always like, hey, you should do Lendora, you know, go on it. Because I was always trying to like lose weight. And I think I was like, no, I could do it on my own. I could just count calories or I could do something like this. And so she's like, just do it. And I'm like, fine. Okay, I'll go ahead and join Lendora. So when I joined Lendora, I lost like 21 pounds. And there was a photographer that was kind of randomly at Lendora in Highland. And so he's like, hey, can I take a photo of you? And I was just like, okay, like, why not? Like, I didn't think it was going to go anywhere. So the photographer took a photo of me. And then I saw it on Yelp. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. You know, like, my face is on Yelp for like Lendora. But then I think a couple of weeks later, I got a phone call from the marketing director. And he was like, hey, we would love for you to do a commercial. And I'm like, I thought it was spam. So I kind of deleted the number. I was like, oh man, they're really trying to get me. And so finally the director called me and was like, hey, we would love for you to be on a commercial. This is not spam. This is like a real thing. And I was like, really? Why? And so I was like, okay, it'd be like a fun thing to do. So what happened was they needed like some people that were actually, you know, not paid actors, people that actually went through the program and lost the weight. So going in there, they had me, you know, they came and they, you know, were talking to me kind of like an interview. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to, you know, get like the whole big part commercial and stuff. So we were filming and, you know, they were telling me like some people's filmings are going to go through, some people are not. So I'm sitting here like, oh, I don't think I did well. This is not going to go far. And then the next thing I know, I'm like, my face is like plastered everywhere. I have like a commercial that I'm doing. And I'm like, what in the world happened? So I didn't really like think I was going to become like a huge ambassador for Lindora. It just kind of happened, you know?
The commercial, I saw it. It's nice. It's clean. And I thought it was good representation. So yeah, I'm glad to hear that it worked out.
Yeah, I am too. Kind of, it was a really cool experience. You know, people ask me all the time, were you ever paid for it? And I'm like, no, but it's really opened doors because I know a lot of people that are struggling with, you know, their weight. They'll come to me and be like, how did you lose the weight? What did you do? And I'm like, you know, I just follow the program that Lindora told me to do and I lost the weight. It wasn't easy. Like, you have to put in a lot of work, you know? But I tell them, like, it's just so much easier having like a partner kind of come alongside you and kind of like coaching you through things. And
do you have a personal coach that help you in this program?
So we have like nurses. So every single day you kind of go in and you check with the nurse. And a lot of times it's like, you don't want to go in weighing more than what you did the previous day. So you're like, kind of like, okay, I don't want to go in. And they're going to ask me what happened? Why didn't you do well yesterday? So instead of like going through, I was like, no, I got to like drop weight every single day or like, you know, make sure that I'm consistent because I don't want her to have to go back and be like, Lori, why didn't you lose weight or what's going on? But they were really sweet nurses. So they're pretty much like nurses kind of like talking to you every day, making sure that what you're doing is like staying on track. Or, you know, if you did do something bad, okay, how can we kind of like substitute this food for something else? So it really helped having like, you know, those nurses every single day kind of like coaching you, reviewing your food log, making sure like, hey, this is what's causing weight gain, or this is like a food that you continue, you know, to eat because it's helping you lose weight. So that really helped. So the nurses really helped.
So with everything that you've got going on, everything that you've accomplished, what's next for you? What's in store? What can we expect from you going forward?
Well, like I said earlier, I'm hoping to continue my education in psychology. So hopefully I'll be a licensed marriage and family therapist one day, Jeremiah. I hope to become you one day, Jeremiah. My perfect example of what I want to do.
Without a doubt. Whenever you're ready, I'm here. I got you.
I'm actually my coach sometimes, so it's okay.
There you go.
So, Lori, where can someone find you online?
You can find me on Instagram at LuluAnn86. I see you have that on the drop box.
Mm-hmm.
Or on Facebook at Lori Sacco. So I have those two platforms that, you know, I occasionally check, you know, here and there.
Occasionally.
Well, Lori, we definitely want to thank you for taking the time. Like, I just want to give some context. We've known Lori now for some time. I've personally known Lori now for about 10 years. And so we're like family, like the sister I never knew I had. So mm-hmm. I appreciate you making the time for us.
I love you guys. You guys are totally family to me. I love you so much. I really enjoy every single episode that you guys put out there. I love seeing your guys' face.
Well, there you have it, folks. That's our show for today.
Thanks again for tuning in.
And as always, like it or not, Beard and Curls is the new his and hers.